This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at dicetower.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 227.
Hello, everybody. It is 2021. Happy New Year.
Hooray!
I am excited to put 2020 behind us. I know it's an arbitrary Gregorian calendar thing, but I don't care. It represents turning a page. I'm good with it.
It can't possibly be any worse.
I'm almost afraid to say that out loud.
Oh, wow. You are hopeful.
Anyway, welcome to the Family Gamers Podcast. As always, I am your host, Andrew. I'm joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And it is an odd-numbered episode. You already heard the man that we have invited to the show. We are super excited this week to welcome none other than the inimitable... Well, Jeremy Howard.
Man, I'm going to give you like $5 for all those beautiful words that you've already used. Oh, goodness, man. Hey, thanks for having me.
It's all good, man.
Thank you for listening today. Hopefully, I entertain you a tad.
We'll try.
I mean, we're already pretty entertained.
We've been laughing for 20 minutes, so
I think
been
we'll
good.
Be good.
It's been real good.
Yeah.
This episode of the Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial.
We recently shared this tip from our sponsor, but we wanted to share it again as more stimulus money is rolling out from the government as of last week. Did you know that sadly, even during this difficult time, scammers abound? There are currently many different versions of a scam where the fraudsters attempt to get your personal information, claiming they need it in order for you to get your stimulus check. Preying on fears is a common fraud technique, as is pretending to be someone in a position of authority. No one from the Treasury Department or the IRS is going to be calling or texting or emailing U.S. citizens to verify information. Instead, you'll receive a good old-fashioned letter in a few weeks, and that will be your official contact from the IRS. Additionally, the IRS has set up a website for you to verify your bank account and or address for the stimulus payments. Go to irs.gov/coronavirus and click Economic Impact Payments. There you'll find info and links to make sure your info is correct and up to date. If you want more helpful advice that maybe applies more directly to you, reach out to First Move Financial by going to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to schedule a 15-minute phone call.
Thank you so much to First Move Financial. All right, and as always, I have brought a fact for the episode number.
Just one fact this time.
Just one. Okay. Now, Jeremy, I actually have this question. So this fact is about a TV show. Have you ever watched the sitcom 227 or 227?
Yeah.
I had never heard of it before. But I learned all about it. I'm sorry. I was 9 years old when it ended syndication. That's my defense. But anyway, here's the thing. 227 is an American sitcom that originally aired on syndication from September 14th, 1985, which is 2 days before I turned four.
I was three.
Until May 6th, 1990, starring Marla Gibbs from The Jeffersons. Other cast members of the show throughout the series run consisted of Hal Williams, Jackie Harry, Elena Reed Hall, Helen Martin, Regina King in her first TV role.
She was one of my crushes.
Yep. Curtis Baldwin, Kia Goodwin, Countess Vaughn, Tukey Smith,
Countess Vaughn,
Barry Sobel, Paul Winfield, and Stoney Jackson.
Paul Winfield. Oh, man.
So like a legend crew.
In 1987,
Jackie Harry won a Primetime Emmy Award for Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Comedy Series and was also nominated for a Golden Globe Award for Best Supporting Actress in a Series, Miniseries, or Television Film.
That's pretty cool.
That's cool. I love those shows. It's almost like when you look at the old SNLs and you look at all these like legends of comedy that kind of went through that whole circuit. And so like, you know, from The Jeffersons and through shows like 227. I just thought that was a cool fact for the episode number 227.
Yeah, man. It's, for black folks, there's like a whole bunch of shows that have like this thing that spawned a lot of talent, like Kids Club for kids just in general. It's like, what's it, Kids Incorporated or the Disney Club? But like for us, it was like, 227, what was that? Good Times, like these, it's just different things. Different cultures have their own, have these hubs of shows. But overall, it's Law and Order. I mean, every actor you ever love is Law and Order.
Every everybody now
that's true.
Has been on Law and Order.
That's true.
I mean, because it's been running for like 25, 30 years. Yeah.
Right. Or they voice acted on The Simpsons.
Yep.
That's also a possibility.
Yes.
It's
just,
right.
Yes.
It's just the thing. Who was saying this today? I think my aunt was saying, she was like, I like Viola Davis. I've loved her ever since she was on Law and Order. I was like, that just shows you how, like, everyone.
Viola Davis. I mean, listen, they need a lot of extras, so I guess it's a good way to kind of get that hook, you know. So I can't knock it. Well, anyway, I'm now going to introduce a man who really needs no introduction, and Jeremy, a force of positivity in board game media. This guy is all over the place. He's done some amazing board. You did like the board game giveaway stuff you did last year was incredible.
Oh,
it was amazing. It was awesome. Worked with all sorts of publishers on that. You do a lot of work now with Man vs. Meeple. You've been the creator of awesome board game channels, including Jambalaya Plays Games and my favorite, Dad and the Dude.
Yeah, Dad and the
Dude. I think we both first met you at PAX Unplugged a couple years ago.
Yeah, a couple years ago.
And it's just been really fun to watch you kind of move through the industry and leave your mark everywhere you go and sometimes keep your mark there and whatever. Yeah. So anyway, he is Jeremy Howard. I am delighted to have you on the show. We've been trying to like hook up and get you for a little while now. So.
Yeah. I try to make myself busy so I can, you know, spread, you know, hopefully positivity to people, you know, across the world when we get a chance, right? Whoever's hearing us out here. But I just want to say this first. All the giveaways that were done this year were started by me, but really the efforts were of publishers and community members, content creators, and just people. Thousands of dollars were donated to people in need. I was going to donate 2-3 meals, a couple hundred bucks to families in need. Thousands of dollars came in. I had to figure out how to get rid of thousands of dollars. And believe me, the emails came ASAP. And we helped a lot of families. So you can do a lot. The board games, you know, that was at the beginning of the pandemic. Same thing. I contacted like 40 publishers. None of them said no. I had to navigate all that. The only thing that publishers did is send me the games. I'm like, no, send them to them. I can't afford shipping. But I had to figure it out.
Right.
But like, I just want to make sure the credit goes to all these beautiful publishers who really, you support them, and they supported the community in a time where they were uncertain about how conventions and everything. So, I want to take credit for all that.
Well, I'm going to give you credit for stepping out there and getting the whole thing started. You can give credit to whoever you wanted to. That's called delegation, man. Yeah. So it's awesome. But so we're going to talk about a lot of that stuff, maybe especially Man vs. Meeple and Dad and the Dude and all that kind of stuff on the second half of the show. But first, let's talk about some games that we've been playing. You were telling us about some games that you checked out recently that you thought were really cool looking.
Yeah, man. I want to talk about this one game because we're in a kind of like the holiday-ish season. People are still visiting their families and stuff like that. And there's this one game I love that nobody talked about. It's called Masterwork. And it's a cooperative word game. And the cool part about it is it's very, very simple. You get, you know, like a deck of cards here. I'm going to pull them out so you can see them while I'm talking about them. But I want to give people context so they can even maybe explain it better. You're going to get a group of people together. Three or more is better. And you're going to have like a word, all right, that person can see. And just like in Just One, where you're on the same team. Everybody wins, everybody loses, right?
Nice. I like that.
And what you're doing is you give everybody their little mini whiteboard, in a sense, of cards, okay? And then they'll write on there, and they'll write clues. They'll just kind of write clues. Like they'll write and say, hey, we just saw a movie. They wouldn't see that. You would just say random things, like 20 questions-ish. You would just say, hey, it's a movie. The movie is actually Home Alone. So you would just say, kids, you know, that kind of stuff. So then they would pare it down. And then they put those guesses into a row. Okay. And then the person who's like that knows the knowledge gives them like a thumbs up, gives them these little thumbs up tokens and puts them on the words that match, that are kind of close, faintly familiar-ish to what it is. And then what you do is you're building these rows of clues that are sort of on point or off point, right? And then eventually you get to the point where you can guess. You actually can guess, I believe, once or twice the actual word.
So everybody knows it's a movie, but only
everybody knows it's a movie. They don't know it's Home Alone, right?
Okay, so they're kind of like they're throwing out like is it bigger than a bread box? Like
is it
sports? Is it romance?
Is it animated? Yeah. You know,
okay, cool.
Are animals in it?
Yeah.
So like that's the thing. You just put it down. You just say animals. You can only write one word. You can't write like 50 words or whatever.
Yeah.
So you just write animal, kid, you know, that kind of stuff like that. And then hopefully you pare it down. And it's paid out over 6 or 7 rounds. It's really fun. It's super simple.
Really cool.
And it gets harder as you go through the deck. And I believe there's like 300 of these. So it's quite a bit.
Wow. What's the name of that again?
This one's called Masterword. It's by Scorpion
Mosque. Masterword.
And Scorpion Mosque is, you know, the publisher of those kids, the kid Zombie Kids and Zombie Kids Evolution, which are two fantastic games. You want to talk about killing the afternoon. That's a good, you know, half, you know, that's a good half a day of putting on stickers, taking out zombies and making, when I say taking out zombies, we're talking like very kiddie, playful zombie kids.
Like Plants vs. Zombies.
Right. Yeah. Like Plants vs. Zombies, the video game. You're literally just moving stuff over and pushing it out. All right. Like that's pretty much
I like it.
But the stickers and stuff like that and opening the envelopes, that's what they do. Scorpion Mosque, but this is one of their word games, and I think it's really good. I can't.
It sounds really, really cool.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to talk about a game that we have been playing a lot. This is a game. So last week we talked about the games that we gave and received for Christmas. One of the games that was on that list was the game Fleet, the dice game.
Fleet.
I knew you wanted it.
So you hadn't ever played it before.
Nope. Never.
Okay.
I promised I would play it with you. I have since played it with you four times.
We've played this game 4 times in the last week. We have a family that we get together for New Year's, and we stay at their house for New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
We played it New Year's Eve. We play board games until 4 a.m. or something crazy.
Yeah.
So we played it on New Year's Eve, and then we got up, and we're like, well, we got time for one more game. And I was like, listen, we played a lot of our games. Like, why don't we play one of your games? Mm-hmm. And
they
my
were
buddy
like,
Courtney
no,
was
we
like,
want to play Fleet the Dice
like, nah,
game again.
Nah, I want to play Fleet the Dice game again. So we played it twice in 12 hours. Man, I love that game so much. That game is like, oh, I just love it. I love that game.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's the best Roll and Write. I think it's right there. Like, if you told me Welcome To is your favorite Roll and Write, got it. If you told me Cartographers is your favorite Roll and Write, got it. But Fleet the Dice game is pretty dang on good.
Yeah.
It's right good. There.
I don't love Welcome To. There's just something about it. It just doesn't grab me.
Mm-hmm.
I like Cartographers a lot. I love Fleet the Dice game.
Yeah. I don't blame you at all.
You got lots to keep track of and lots of decisions to make in Fleet the Dice game.
Yes.
That's why you like it so much.
It is a gamer's Roll and Write. And you can tell that the people that made the game are gamers because they're like, but this exception doesn't count. And you're like, every question that you would think to ask, they have answered.
They've answered it.
And some of them they answered on the player sheet.
Or right on the player sheet.
You know, it's a game of that quick positive feedback. You get a lot of like, hey, I did this. Ooh, okay, so then I unlock this. Whoa, when I unlock this, I get this, and this. Oh, you know, like that kind of thing. And,
it's like the comboing. Yeah.
Right.
It's
awesome. And it keeps you going. It definitely keeps you interested, and it also a little bit off-turn interest, right, with the dice. So it's like, that's good enough, right? That's good enough. So, yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah.
That's a great one. Make sure you get that second edition. It's got some other stuff in there.
I don't even know which one I have. I have no idea.
I bought whichever one was on the Eagle Griffin site.
Whichever one was on sale.
Speaking of games that are really, really surprisingly good, we also started playing some Maduris from Haba, looks like a Haba game, kind of, and doesn't play like a Haba game at all.
It has Haba components. It has a... Actually, that's about it. It has Haba components.
Big chunky.
It doesn't play like a Haba game. The rulebook isn't organized like a Haba game.
But it's also a family night game. So their family night is they're pushing for games that are not necessarily child-like. They're
more so
for families that game in a sense. So that's what you're looking at. I played their Viking bowling game. It's totally a family game. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, you could play with your kids, but I think more than likely your little kids are not going to be good at it, especially with the decisions you have to make with the timing.
Yeah.
So it's like when you play with kids, you know, you got to assume the age. Otherwise, you're just smacking the ball around, right? But then you have Honga. Honga is a fantastic game, and it's not that easy. Like, my son, I had to work him up on a couple rules. And it worked out. But yeah, I could see it if he was like a year or two younger. He's 7. He was 7 when he played it. That's a really good game. It's a basic Euro, really. But the timing is pretty interesting.
Exactly.
It's really interesting. So yeah, Haba, don't sleep on him. Don't sleep on him.
No, absolutely not. No, it's good stuff. And when we played Maduris, you know, we would play it for a little bit. And then we'd be like, oh, man. Oh, man.
Am I having AP here?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I just did not... I just did not expect this. What? I'm
confused. Why do I have AP?
Oh, so, but yeah. Yeah, it's good. I love the art. I love the theme. I don't think there's enough.
Well, of course you love the theme. It's Celtic.
Yeah. I don't think there's enough with that theme. I want more with that theme. But
yeah. You want more with Celts and Druids?
Clans of Caledonia is a great game. I want to play it more.
Okay.
You know, I want to play that game with you.
I got rid of Clans of Caledonia. It is like, it's my baby come back. I would sing baby come back to it. You can blame it all on me. I want Clans back.
I play it on Board Game Arena.
Yeah.
It's there.
It's not there, enough, baby. I need you back in my life.
All right, Jeremy. Hit us with another one. What do you got?
Oh, so Panosaurus is at least a pretty strong lineup here this fall, and one of the highlights of them is Gods Love Dinosaurs. Now, I played it wrong, did not like it, okay? Gotta play games right. Because you never know, you might like them, right? So in this game, it's like a tile drafting game. You're going to have a board that has these tiles across, and I think there's like four or five, depending on the player count. And at the bottom, you have this dinosaur. You get this little kind of tile board that's an ecosystem, and what you're going to do is draft tiles from there and put predators or preys on them, depending on what row you draw from them. And as the game goes along, what you're trying to do is spread these prey out on your board so that you can kind of have some adjacency for when that column is gone and you trigger this exponential growth of these, you know, prey or predators. And what happens when you activate the predators is they have to go eat the prey so they can multiply. Okay, so prey multiply as you expand your board, but also the predators come and eat them, and as they move across spaces, they leave other spawn of their themselves. Now, here's the kicker. Out of nowhere, when the dinosaurs line up in that stuff, you are going to activate the dinosaurs that are on you. You get one dinosaur in the middle, and you can get multiple ones. But what happens is the dinosaur goes out and it eats the predators. When it eats the predators, it makes eggs that score points. So there's a puzzle of the timing of trying to keep enough prey out there, because when the predators move, they have to eat. When the dinosaur moves, it has to eat something. So you have to have enough to keep your board full of these animals to eat. And you have to move the prey because they have little tricky movements to them. So like the saber tooth can only move two spots, but one of those two spots has to be where you can, you know, double up on your, you know, or the hawk, whatever it is, goes in a straight line, three spaces. Well, you want to try to get as many of those out so that when it's time to move them, you can, you know, eat and produce. But then you also want to be able to gobble all the Tyrannosaurus. They're like a little Tyrannosaurus looking thing. And you try to move across and grab those two to score points. It's a really interesting thing, because about halfway through the game, you're like, I don't get what the big deal is. Oh, Lord, I have a lot of space on my board. I've been gobbling up too much, you know? So you got to kind of, you start to see the long game of your choice, and your ecosystem does not match what you want to do towards the end of the game. Right. So, yeah, a little bit more of an engine game than you would think, in a sense.
Interesting.
But, yeah, it's a really interesting game. Like I said, I played it wrong the first time I played it, and I was like, I don't see what the – you know how people say, I don't see what the hype was. There was no hype. But there was no hype. I didn't even know this game was coming. But I am – this is one of my surprises of the last year.
Nice.
It's like, wow, interesting. Fun little game. It's pretty, too. You got all these little nice little cute meeples that come with each one. They got cute little rats.
Look at the cute little guys.
Saber. Oh, these little birdie birds. Those look kind of weird when you look
adorable.
At them on the things. But, yeah. Like pterodactyls.
They look like dragons.
They look kind of like griffins.
They're really cute. Yeah, I mean, they're really cute. There's like, you know, there's like 150 of these things in here. So, yeah, it's really pretty.
Nice.
But, yeah.
Nice
color design. Really nice color design. Works at all player counts, too. They make the board tighter and stuff depending on your player count. So that's good, too.
Awesome. So that's God Loves Dinosaurs from Panosaurus.
God Loves Dinosaurs.
All right.
It's time to talk about Silver and Gold. I asked for this for Christmas. I got it. It is not going to be my favorite roll and write or flip and write, but I really like it for how quick it is to set up and get into it and just burn through the whole game in 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Burnt through the whole game in 15 minutes. I respect that.
And I can get more people to play this with me than some of my previous favorites like Hex Roller, because there's a theme to Silver and Gold. Yeah,
It's a loose theme. I mean, look, there's pirate X's, and there's palm trees, and there's coins, and that's about it.
You're trying to fill out your little maps.
It's enough of a theme that it gets me past, like, I don't hate Hex Roller, but it's just there's nothing that pulls me to the game like that.
I respect that.
Yeah.
And I love how fast this is.
I got barely anything for Silver and Gold, but it is fun somewhat, and it does play in 15 minutes.
Different strokes.
Well, that's pretty much it. It's fun and it's fast.
Yeah, it's fun and it's fast. Not, you know, I'm not saying that like it's bad or anything. I think for me, who has like a lunchtime group that I play with, it's perfect. You know, it fits in there, right? And if somebody wants to play again, we extend our lunch to 37 minutes. Trying to get in that second game.
37 minutes.
Trying to get that second game in.
I like it.
Don't worry, we're cleaning up. Got one more round, guys. Got one more round.
Come on, guys. We can play this round in 2 minutes. Let's go.
Play this round in 2 minutes. Seriously.
All right. So next one on our list is Kingswood from 25th Century Games.
Yeah.
This is a really fun rondel action, kind of. It's somewhere between resource management and set collection.
Yeah.
It's somewhere kind of in there. I mean, it's you're just trying to defeat monsters to get points, really. Right. Everybody's sharing control of the knights on the board.
Yes.
And you're just trying to acquire the necessary components to be able to defeat monsters with those components. And Krog has the worst ability in the game. I'm just going to say that right now. Anitra is like, here, you can be this guy.
I enjoyed playing with him. He was horrible. I'm sorry.
Krom.
Krom.
Oh, he was terrible.
She gave me a cold handoff, not a warm handoff.
something like that, yeah.
Ouch.
I will never forgive her. No, I don't
know. Hey!
Wow. Honey, I love you.
All the things to be petty about.
I like it.
Listen, we just played it like 2 hours ago. It's still a little bit fresh, okay? The wound is fresh.
Yes, I can tell.
I'm pouring salt in my own wound here. But anyway.
It was so petty.
I don't know. I'm liking it because it's got that thing you get in good Euro-y games where you can't ever do everything you want to do on your turn.
No.
It limits you, and you're like, well, you can only, you know, you're only going to do this tiny little fraction of what you actually want to do.
And with more player counts, you definitely have this thing of like, ooh, don't move too far. Don't move too far. I needed to be here.
Stay right there.
A little bit of interest on off turns, which is a really important thing to me. Like, it's just a really important thing to me. Like, do I need to pay attention, or could I possibly be looking at my phone, which is a no-no, but sometimes turns take too long in certain games.
It's
so
true.
You know, so it's like, okay, brother. But this game definitely keeps it under an hour, and it does it well, right? Mm-hmm. So
That off-turn thing that you're talking about, I mean, I just call it, I guess, player engagement in general, but it's super important in a family game, because if your little one starts to pivot away from the game, like...
Mm-hmm. They're gone. They're gone. You're not getting them back.
If you get past 7 degrees, they're gone. Like, so having that engagement in there is really, really helpful. Even if we're randomly allocating the asymmetric player powers, we will usually pull out the player power that allows you to go where the... What is that the guy called?
The Kingsguard.
The Kingsguard.
The position of the Kingsguard.
Ignore the position. Oh, okay. We'll give that to a young kid, or we'll give the one that you don't have to pay coins to move extra. We'll give those to the younger ones because it simplifies the strategy of the game a little bit.
Yeah, I think we can have a conversation about that all day, but like, you know, how you teach emergent gamers.
We've talked about it a lot.
Yeah, that's an important thing. And there's some publishers that do a really good job of setting that up for you. Mm-hmm. But it takes a while to learn as a parent, or just as a person who runs a kid's training, you know, a program where you play board games or whatever.
Right.
How to get kids on board in a smoother way, and then, adapt to all the learners that are around you, and then also make the game good for everybody around you at the same time, because you could be playing with a 6, 8, and a 10-year-old, and you got to find some way to say, hey, like, how do I bring balance to this game?
Right.
And some publishers do a good job of that.
You want to simplify the game experience for the younger ones, but you don't want to cheapen the experience for them.
Right. You don't want to cheapen the event. Yeah, that's perfect example. Yeah. You don't want to cheapen it.
And we don't like letting our kids win. I mean, that's a strategy for some parents. It's not one for us. No. So
we'll intentionally handicap, but we'll make it intentional, like, right, so that the other kid can see, like, hey, this is going to be easier for mom and dad, so I'm going to do this to make it harder for us and easier for you.
Yeah.
Or and just, now let's play.
As I say, like, just point gaps or, like, handicap points is fine. Yeah. Just because they can say, hey, like, you know, my son and I, we were just kind of doing this thing, and I kind of slowed down a little bit for something, and he ended up going through all the tiebreakers together.
That's awesome.
Live. It got weird. I was like, I think I got you. I think I got you, son. He's like, nope. Hello.
I love it. I love it.
But I mean, whatever, man. It's fine. It's fine. We learn our lessons, win or loss.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Give me another one. What do you got?
Oh, so Honeybuzz. Honeybuzz just delivered to Kickstarter backers, but it's coming soon. Let me tell you, this game is dead gorgeous. It is dead gorgeous. And it's squishy. So if you got the deluxe components, it's got these nice little squishy components. Mm-hmm. But in this game, you are bees rivaling bee colonies. And what you're doing is you're placing this little bee workers on different spots on the board, and you're gaining a tile. Now, what you're actually doing is there's a little puzzle of how you're creating this kind of formation or circle, in a sense. These are not circles, but they're actually like tiles that kind of create a kind of a, I don't know.
Well, they're a hexagonal, like,
yeah, hexagonal tiles. Yeah. I just couldn't come up with the word. Sorry. So you got these hexagonal tiles, and when they come up in certain formations, you trigger all the actions that you made on those tiles. Yeah, so this is the cool part. So now you have that element, plus you are going to gather certain nectar based on the type of formations you've built. So if it's three, you are trying to build a certain nectar. If it's four, you're trying to beat a certain nectar. Like, so you're trying to find that as well. So you actually have to go across a little nectar board and land on that spot to put it in the middle. Then you have an action that's called fanning that creates the actual nectar. Okay. And then you turn that into a market. So you turn into the market, and that market goes down as you turn all this stuff in. So it's got a, like, kind of a process to it. Or you can turn them into complete mission cards that just have basic requirements. There's a memory component of this game that you can use, or you can just use it where you try to first come, first serve, move around and grab whatever you need to grab and stuff like that. It's such a smart design. It's light, but it can be tough for kids because the catch here is that if a child were to see three tiles come together and say, hey, I made this little thing, they would only get one type of the four. So there's a thing of like, hey, no, this is made of three tiles, this is made of four tiles, this is made of five tiles. And that's what you have to explain to them. But they may not see the puzzle that you're trying to create.
Right.
Or they may not understand the market that you're creating. Or they may not understand how you move and navigate this little thing to get to the proper nectar that you want. So it's a game that is kid adaptive, but at the same time, like, there is going to be some major front running if you're playing this at the table with your children, unless they are really good game, you know, like they're pretty decent at gaming and stuff like that. Although I feel over multiple plays, specifically because of the prettiness of the game and how it rolls out, I think they would really enjoy it because they would probably watch you do it and they would kind of try to figure it out. I mean, even I did that. It's got so many different ways to score. I mean, like, you have so many scoring cards. It's ridiculous. And then you also have so many starting formations based on your experience. So you can even add, you can give them an easy card. You can get the most difficult card. You can set it to where you would almost handicap yourself based on the choice, the starter formation of your base tiles. So there's a lot of things that, like, because if you use the regular setup, you basically put one tile down, you get to make your first little nectar. So it's like, but if you use the other one, it's like, it's so separated that you can't, you just can't. So it's like, hey, you got to figure it out on your own. And so.
All right.
That's a really, really good game. That's a very, very good game. It was in my top 10 this year, past year, 2020.
Nice. So that's Honeybuzz, and who makes that?
That's published by Elf Creek Games. Yeah, that's a really good one.
You've talked to some people at Elf Creek.
Yeah, I talked to the folks at Elf Creek Games about Honeybuzz at PAX Unplugged a year ago.
2019. Yeah, in 2019 we talked about it. Yeah.
It was like the last time we were allowed to get together and actually talk about board games.
And in a big group of people with board games. Yeah. So I have to say, I bought Andrew Roll for the Ages, the Bronze Age, for Christmas, kind of on a whim. I was already on the Eagle Griffin website, and I was like, he likes Through the Ages. This will be a good choice, right? It'll be a good choice. I think I like it more than Andrew does.
Oh, wow. You did the Homer Simpson bowling ball thing?
Hey,
like,
listen.
Hey, honey. Listen,
not that he doesn't like
you.
It, but I'm just like, hey, can we play it again?
Okay, here's
can we play it again?
It's not wow. Okay, it's not that I don't like this game. It is that somebody kicks my butt.
I mean, that would be part of why I want to play
every time
it
we
again.
Play this game.
Do you need a handicap for this game? Is that
very much so.
Husband adaptive? Husband
oh,
adaptive.
My goodness. Husband she adaptive. Destroys me in this game. Like, you're talking about Honey Buzz, and I'm on board because I'm all about spatial puzzles. You know, like, that's my thing. Like, we're playing Athenium from Renegade right now,
okay.
which is... Like this, your.
Oh, I should have bought that.
It's
when
a library.
The premise is that you're a student and you're helping the librarian like put the books on the shelves or whatever. It's beautiful. It's a fun spatial puzzle. I really like that game.
And surprisingly light in terms of.
Yeah, it's very light, and it's got a small table presence, which
is
actually it's pretty good. I mean, it's not a heavy game, but it's the game that I wanted Ex Libris to be.
Okay. That's weird. I'm a little worried because I love Ex Libris.
We have to play Ex Libris more, I will admit. And they're very, I think they're very different games, but it's the exact same theme. And it's got the same tongue-in-cheek approach to fantasy literature and all that kind of stuff, which
I should have bought it.
But this is a much lighter game.
It's a much lighter game. And mechanically, it's very different.
It's okay.
But I don't know. Yeah, it's a spatial puzzle. And I like it.
But back to Roll Through the
Ages. So like all those spatial puzzle games, you know, plus Fleet, I'm loving these games. I'm having a really great gaming experience. Da, 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 da. And then there's Roll Through the Ages, which is good. It's a roll and write. I don't even know really how to describe it, but all I know is I keep rolling extremely poorly in this game.
Well, you're doing a little bit of that kind of like press your luck on the die rolls to get different kinds of resources, and the different kind of resources are going to let you do different things. I think it's a combination of bad luck on your part and the fact that I'm looking at die rolls and like, even on my first die roll, I'll just be like, nope, that's good enough. Let me work through that and move forward. And you're a little bit more focused on like, I want this thing to happen.
Yeah. I mean, at one point I basically was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to go for this crazy strategy and see what happens. Yeah, I mean, because I'm like, nothing else is working. Like, whatever.
That's the desperation move. You're like, you know, I'll
by the way, that didn't work
time.
Either. Narrator, that didn't work either.
Yeah, I know.
It is fun, I will say. It's a blast. And I also will say that the Eagle Griffin Roll and Write games are...
That's strong.
They're great games, and they're in a box that is just the right size. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're, you know, schlepping this huge box around. Like, those things are packed.
Eagle Griffin doesn't do bad at this point right now. They're really doing good right now. Good and great.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, I think Baseball Highlights is like one of my all-time favorite two-player games. Yeah. I love that game. That's Eagle Griffin. It's some missteps
football
along the way.
Football Highlights is a little rough, but it's good.
Is it good? I want to play it.
It's a little rough, but it's good. Yeah.
When Andrew saw the Eagle Griffin box come to the door, because I wasn't there to intercept it, he thought it might be Football Highlights.
Oh.
And so he was both impressed and disappointed when he opened it was Fleet instead.
When she handed me the thing that was the Fleet, the dice game size box, and I held it and I was like, this is board game weight. I knew what it was. I knew. I would have been super confused if I opened Roll Through the Ages first, by the way.
I tried very hard to make sure that Fleet made it to you first.
Yeah. So Roll Through the Ages is a very interesting take on the roll and write formula because the way you accrue resources and stuff is neat.
Yeah, I've also never seen a roll and write where you had like the paper that you're doing the writing on and you have the dice, but you also have a board that keeps track of resources like as an intermediary until you spend them on doing other things.
Okay. Like with pegs. There's pegs
a little
that you're
peg
moving
board.
Around on a board to track all your resources.
Do you,
it's weird.
Do you have Rolled West?
No.
Have you played Gold West?
No, not that one either.
Okay, so you definitely need to have Rolled West. Okay, so I'm just going to skip a step on that one. That's a really good roll and marker, right? Yeah, that's definitely going to one you want to take a look at, and you probably will find it dirt cheap at this point. It's a TMG title. So this is probably going to be on deep sale, but that one right there, definitely check out.
Noted.
Just based on what you're talking about, I'm thinking to myself, like, yeah, they would really like Rolled West. That's a really fun little one. And it's good, like, it's actually, if you liked that game, even the concept, you're like, I don't know, but you kind of see the vision of it, you know, get Gold West. Gold West will do it. It'll be the Euro version. Mm-hmm. You'll be like, okay, now I see what's going on here. But yeah, they kind of restricted it down. To this little thing here. But yeah, it's really good. Interestingly enough,
cool.
Fleet versus Fleet the Dice Game. I did not like Fleet. Like, I didn't like Fleet at all. And I was like, kind of, I don't know how I got the dice game, but I did on a whim. And I was so impressed with it. And now I think I want to give Fleet another chance because I like Fleet the dice game so much. It's just a weird thing.
I think
thing.
That can happen sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, maybe I just gave Fleet a bad deal. I just thought, I thought about that a while back. I was like, how did I just end up loving this game and sticking out my chest for Fleet the dice game and just not liking Fleet at all? So,
right. Yeah, you know, I mean, I that's know, one of those, like, when I play a game, actually, Ex Libris would be a perfect example of this, where I play it and I'm just like,
it just wasn't.
What is it? Where? Because people like this game. Like,
do you need Ex Libris the roll and write? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying? I need to put the game down for like 3 months and then come back to it in a completely different frame of mind.
You do. You have to wipe your mouth and come back.
It's still on the shelf. Okay. I'll wipe my mouth and I'll get back to it.
Mm-hmm. Wipe your mouth.
I'll give it a couple more shots before we, you know, trade it away or give it away or whatever.
You even have it in.
Or decide that it deserves more prominence, you know, maybe.
You have, actually you don't, because you have it in a little area. I'm looking back here. They have it in a little shelf of their calyx that's like, that looks kind of book-like, okay?
Yeah.
So they're kind of going with, hey, this is a consistent thing. Let's keep it with the books. If we get another game with that's book-like, we'll put it there for display purposes.
Well, it's so right next to Grim Forest.
In the special sleeve that makes it look like a giant fairy tale book.
Yes. Yeah. So, okay.
It is not next to Fire in the Library because that one is tiny.
Yeah, that goes on a different shelf because that other shelf is shorter. And
So I see your vision, but it still needs to come out.
It will.
No. I'm not going to give you. I'm not going to give you. You know. I'm not going to punch you in the gut with that one because I have my Ex Libris. I tracked it down because it was impossible to find because it's pretty much out of print.
Mm-hmm.
And it is one of the games that I never owned that I wanted to own.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I just loved it. And I hadn't played it in 2.5 years. And I just said, I need to own this game. I know how much I like this game.
Mm-hmm.
And the solo mode is good because I do cover a lot of solo games. Mm-hmm. And it's mine, baby. It's mine. What about former Baby Comeback games? What am I?
When I get this thing on the table, I'm going to look you up and be like, hey, I played it.
Yeah, we played it.
Now that you tell me that the solo
get off my back, I'm going to play it.
I might be like, I'm usually the solo game player in the family. Yeah. So
absolutely.
That might make a comeback.
That might make a comeback. Ooh, you got Prism Arena back there. I'm just dipping and dapping all back in your
combination. That game rules.
We can talk about that. That is a great learning opportunity.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's a really good learning opportunity.
And that's one of those ones, like we were talking before, about kind of onboarding kids and not giving them too much information all at once. Prism Arena is awesome
perfect.
At that.
You know, I talked with the designer of that game and that team. There's so much to it.
Mm-hmm.
Not only are these people of color, you get stickers. People love stickers. You get to change the look of the person. There's so many different hairstyles. He even consulted me on some of these hairstyles and stuff like that. But the whole concept of we're not battling to kill each other or anything. We're training to be better.
Yes, I love that.
I was
I love this.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, even if my kids do play it and still are like, ha, I got you. You know, I killed you. And I'm like, you didn't kill them. You bounced them. They're coming right back.
It's like, you know what? I don't know how to say it. It's not like X-Men in their, X-Men in their training
danger
thing. But it's almost like
the danger
you're just
room.
Doing
That's
like this battle simulation. Like, almost like, not like Tron either, where you're taking each other out. But a combination of them, but friendly.
Well, my kids would probably liken it to the new Stretch Armstrong.
Oh my gosh.
There's three teenagers with superpowers and like they basically get corporate sponsors and one of the things the corporate sponsors give them is like a danger room training arena.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's the thing. What a game.
Good point. Because of the way that you level up in the game and you get Prisma powers once the game is over. There's a whole component to the game that takes place after you've played the game.
Yes.
So now your kids are sitting next to each other and they're showing each other their cards and they're like, oh, look at this cool thing that I got. So now you've got them playing a game together, which every parent in the world is like, yes. And then you've got this like post-game bonding thing that's happening.
Yeah.
And it's just all good all around.
Love it. It is such an underrated game. I did a preview for the Kickstarter and the Kickstarter failed. And I was just like, this game is making such a point that is totally missed here.
Yeah.
And I think it needed a convention.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if you played it at a convention and you watch Rory talk about it, like
I love
Rory and Mike
so
talk about, so yeah, they're just so good. And if they would have talked to you, then you would understand what they were shooting for. And I'm sure people would love it.
I totally agree with you. It was in our top five of the year. I think we gave it a 9.5 out of 10, something like that. You know, it's great. It's fantastic. So you want to look at anything else and bring it up?
I know. Hey, you know what? Actually, right next to it is Seikatsu.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Seikatsu, one of Anitra's favorites. What I call one of the perfect Zen games. I call it a Zen game.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're playing solo. Wow, what a puzzle. Anyway, what a puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have a spot of tea and sit down and play Seikatsu. but the whole idea of how that scores is a really good conversation to have with children, like to kind of see where they're at mathematically, and also to see their kind of like their ability to assess like future turns. It's a really good exercise to see where they're at strategically and seeing further than what's now, because it doesn't give enough immediate points. It gives you some, and you're like, okay, but then you see at the end of the game, you're like, oh, my choices were very temporary. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's a really good thing. Just so you know, there is expansion on the way.
I knew there was the new version coming out that's all like cute
dogs
and stuff.
Dogs, that's the dogs. But there is an expansion on the way. I just saw that today, by the way.
There you go.
I'm excited for
Somebody's
that.
Excited.
I am excited to that. And that's actually a really cheap game, by the way.
Yeah.
With really simple rules, beautiful, beautiful components. Oh, beautiful
and it's
components.
It's almost a perfect information game. Not quite. You get to hide a little bit of stuff.
Yes. Yes. It is.
But honestly, man, we reviewed that like 3 years ago now.
Yeah, about 3 years ago.
And at the time, our kids were pretty young. So there are a couple of times I did play it completely open-handed with the kids, and it still worked great. Uh-huh. So
definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. That's a really strong recommendation on those both of those games. Very strong recommendation. Because I'm all about games that also assess where a child is at. And that helped me with my son, who we now haven't been gifted and talented, but I like there were games that I even used myself as a former educator of children, because I educate adults now. I wanted to see, you know, just kind of like where he's developing, what spots are missing. And there's games that can do that. And that was one of them where I was just like, oh, okay, so I know where his, you know, where his developmental stages are. And that's not, of course, not sediment, but it's just, I was like, wow, that's one of those good games to see, you know, just to see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is he just putting down stuff? Like, is he putting down stuff? Okay, I'll put the green next to the green, you know, like the bird next to the bird.
You know, and the next level is kind of starting to see your rows line up. And then after that, you're like, oh, but I want to deny the other player having their rows line up the way they want them to.
Or my son would do this thing where, and I was like, oh, critical thinking. He would ask me, he's like, if I put this here, will it score me now or at the end better?
Mm.
Just because he didn't even, I remember him saying something like that to me. And he says it sometimes in games. He was like, well, can I do this? Will it be better if I do it now or later? I was like, wait, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
We were playing Montana as a 5-year-old. He said that to me. I said, wait, what did you say, boy? Like he said a curse word.
Nice.
Like he said a curse word. But that let me know where he was at developmentally. Like he thinks, he's thinking about these things more, sometimes overwhelming for children, right?
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes overwhelming. It's overload, and you find that out. But, you know, hopefully as parents, you are paying attention to that kind of stuff. I'll tell you one good game that's really good for that is Bugs on Rugs.
Oh, yeah.
Must own. First of all, as a whole, must own game. Must own game. It is, I mean, you're drafting cards. And I think the cool part is that even if the kids don't know how they're drafting the cards, at the end, as you count up scores, they can see the importance of what cards they took.
Yeah.
And so
it's one of those games where kids go, wait, I get it now. Can we play it again?
Yeah. And that's the thing. That's what happens. So that's like, it gets everybody interested in games, but it also, you know, like that's the thing. It's like, ooh, I want to get good. It's one of the games that does that.
Yes.
It's just, that's a good game to get someone excited, get a kid excited about playing games. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun with that. All right. Let's do one more. So before we got started, you showed us Fallout Shelter, and you said you were gonna sell us on this game on the show. So play the entire family plays the iPad game.
Okay.
We're familiar with. I mean, I played the, you know, Fallout 3, 4, FPS, blah, blah, blah.
Yes, thankfully, our kids think Fallout is mostly just about going into town and talking to people.
Yeah, because it isn't.
Those are the parts I could play, like, when the kids were up.
So, the interesting thing about it, Fallout Shelter is you don't have to be a fan of Fallout here at all. You don't even need to know any context. As a matter of fact, the way it's marketed, first of all, you get the game in like a lunch pail. It's like in a,
love
like
in
a
that.
Lunch pail. And of course, Pip-Boy is super cute, right?
Yes, he is. Cute.
They don't know that they're walking into this vault because there's a nuclear explosion coming.
And there's going to be a, you know, barren wasteland afterwards.
Right.
Nobody needs to know that.
Nor do they need to anyway, because there's nothing in the game that gives you that at all. What this game does is you are playing a worker placement game, similar to what looks like Fallout Shelter. And what is Fallout Shelter? It's a game where you're basically building a little bit of a civilization in the bottom of this kind of elevator type thing.
Yeah, Fallout Shelter, the video game, is a lot like a Sim City or a Sim Tower or something. That you're very constrained in how much stuff you can build at once. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you have all these cards that represent locations, and you're placing the workers at these locations. You start with two. So you're going to be building up this pool of workers as you do things. So you're just placing them, and simply placing them on something and then getting a resource. And you take one resource, which is cubes, to represent that. And they go inside your little player board. Right?
Nice. Whoops. I always like that with the
They go inside your little player board, so you get that the visual look of it, and they glow. They're like glowing looking. They don't glow, but they have the
like that translucent green kind of thing.
Yeah. So they have these little green things right there, and then they have the happy signs, which are points. So you get the same thing if you're familiar with Fallout. You get the looks as well.
The theming is good. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean theming is right on point, but you're really just placing the people on the cards that match. And then getting the resources. But you can buy more locations, just like you can in the game. And you also can get special, right? So just like in Fallout, you have, you know, your little upgrades here. And you put those on there, and then you get to go to specific locations as well. You also get benefits from having someone take your building and use them. So it is competitive. And in the regular Fallout, you have Fallout Shelter. It is just you. So it's really just you. So it works really well. It's got these cute little meeples. Oh, little Fallout.
Oh, my goodness. Little boys.
Every single one. And that's the thing. Like I said, this does not have to be somebody who knows Fallout. The Pip-Boys are so cute. And they have different ones. No matter what, every single faction has different sculpts for each one. And I have 30
of them. Oh, my goodness.
I have 30 of these. So I have Pip-Boys everywhere. I haven't put them back yet, but I have Pip-Boys everywhere. Fallout's everything. So, yeah, it's super cute. It plays in like 45 minutes, tops. Tops. Oh, and you even, by the way, you get the chuck dice. I should say this. You get the chuck dice and fight off against these monsters that, you know, monsters like in Fallout Shelter, and they come in these little translucent little things here. So you got your fire, and you put them on the locations, and you roll the dice to beat them. So you got the scorpion.
To try to get them off again.
Like
scorpions.
And then you can buy little weapons to kind of gear up, but nothing looks violent at all. Buying things, putting in new locations. You even got a place where you can recover if you get hit. Things like that. It just such a sweet little elegant game. You don't have to go too deep into this one, like I said, thematic-wise. But it all comes in this cute little tin. It's like $30 tops. You could probably get it on sale now for $20.
That seems like a pretty easy one right
sold.
There. I think she sold. Good job.
This one's, I mean, like when I say like, this is one of those slept-on games from 2020. Like, this game came and went. Like, I saw that at the same PAX, by the way. And I was walking by in the morning, right before it opened, and I was like, wait, hold up, record scratch. What is this? And I'm Fallout. Fallout is everything. Can I sit down and play this game? And we played it before it opened in, like, 30 minutes.
Nice.
And he was like, this is literally – he's like, we're going to play a speed game of this. You're going to get all your workers, and you're just going to be placing this back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, refresh, set it back and forth, back and forth. And, like, yeah, it's beautiful. It's awesome.
Yeah, definitely. I saw it at New York Toy Fair Like literally 3 months before the country shut down.
You mean like 3 weeks before the country
That's what I meant. Three weeks before the country shut down. I saw the game there. It was like on a, it's not a consumer show. So like you're not playing
right,
the games.
It's not right.
A,
right. Yeah,
but I did, I snapped a whole bunch of pictures of it when I was at that show.
I vaguely remember that.
Hearing the good reviews is good.
Yeah. You won't find, you actually won't find people who've played it. I did a like kind of a video snippet post, and just like Sorcerer Cities, like there's certain games that just really got penalized for coming out right then.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
totally. And I just like
people
Sorcerer
just
City.
Get to see him.
I had a post about Sorcerer City, not one bad word. I had a post about Fallout Shelter, not one bad word. And nobody would know that, right? Like nobody, right. No buzz, yeah. No nothing. It came out in March. Worst month ever.
Oh, right. Know, like, it's almost like those games just need like a soft launch, pretending that they're brand new kind of thing. You know, just
right,
to,
right.
Just yeah,
y- yeah, you're right. Stuff. It's like, hey, just make it a game of the year. Like video, game of the year like video games, yeah, yeah. Right? Like video games, like game of the year edition. It's like, oh,
well,
you can
in board games, it's
it.
Big box edition. That's right. The phrase for board games. Like,
but, guess what? Nobody bought this, but we still have a lot of content we put money into.
Right. Right. All right. Well, why don't we do this? You have seen the kind of content that Jeremy brings to the table already. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about that. Talk a little bit more about, like I said at the top of the show, what you're doing with Man vs. Meeple and all that stuff. And yeah, we're going to talk about the dad and the dude, which I'm looking forward to. So we will be right back. Oh, hey guys, look. It looks like the egg is hatching.
Aw, look at the cute little baby dragon.
We have another egg over here.
Aw, man, it's a broken shell.
Dragon eggs and empty eggs? What could this possibly be?
This is a snap review for Dragomino, also known as My First King Domino.
That's right. Dragomino is a game by Bruno Cathala, Marie Fort, and Wilfried Fort. It's published by Blue Orange Games. 2 to 4 players ages 5 plus can play a game of this in just about 15 minutes.
Like King Domino, you can play special dominoes into your own area with matching land types for a better score.
So that's the game, Dragomino. Anitra, let's talk about the art in this game.
Just like in King Domino, the land tiles are beautifully illustrated by Maeva De Silva and Christine Deschamps, and each one is subtly different from the others.
Ah, but now we have what, Ash?
We have the dragon eggs. When they're flipped over, some reveal broken eggshells, but some have very, very cute little baby dragons. Each dragon is different, but all of them are adorable.
All the land types and the egg colors match up very well. Forest and prairie eggs are both green, but with enough subtle detail that make them easy to tell apart. Asher, you want to talk about the mechanics of Dragomino?
Sure. Players draft domino tiles and place them on their land. Everyone starts with the same exploration domino to build on. And the youngest player gets the mommy dragon token.
That means you get to go first.
Mm-hmm.
You start with laying out 4 dominoes, and each player drafts 1 in a turn. In a 2 or 3 player game, the undrafted dominoes are discarded at the end of the round.
Try to match 1 or more land types along the edges of the domino that you're placing. For each edge that you match, grab an egg token of the corresponding type. Desert, snow, prairies, forests, mountains, or volcanoes.
How can they even live in there?
Dragons are special. You should know that. Flip over the egg to hatch it. An adorable baby dragon is worth 1 point, but an empty shell is worth nothing. There is a consolation prize, though. Mommy dragon comes over to investigate the empty shell. That means you get to go first on the next turn.
After all the dominoes in the box have been drafted, or discarded, add up your points. And the mommy dragon is worth 1 extra point. The player with the most dragons wins.
So, Anitra, what did we expect from Dragomino?
Well, I've played King Domino with kids as young as 4, so I was really skeptical that there was a need for a My First version of the game. But I did expect that the mechanics would stay nice and simple. Dragomino is easy to understand, even if you haven't played King Domino.
I expected, because this was a game that was targeted towards a younger audience, that there would be a little bit less of the planning and strategy and a little bit more luck involved. And we saw that with those tokens.
So let's talk about what surprised us in Dragomino.
We didn't think that Dragomino would be so engaging, but then again, who doesn't like hatching cute baby dragons?
Dragomino simplifies the mechanics from King Domino while adding a hefty dose of luck, as we talked about. This is especially important when playing with little kids because it levels the playing field between kids and adults. Dragomino also removes the need for arithmetic, which I can really appreciate when my brain just doesn't want to do any more multiplication or addition.
But the dragon eggs do provide an opportunity to talk about probability. So this isn't arithmetic, but this is a math-related abstract concept that we can talk about. Some lands are more likely to produce dragons, and some are more likely to produce empty shells. The volcanoes have 7 dragons and 2 broken shells. The desert has 7 dragons and 7 empty shells. So Asher, was there anything about Dragomino that surprised you?
I definitely expected that there would be dragons. It's kind of obvious. It's in the name, and there was one on the box. But I didn't think that the dragons would come in the eggs. I thought it would be some other way.
Like dragons being territorial or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think Dragomino is a game that will be great for younger kids, especially age 4, 5, and 6, but have staying power for years to come. I've actually found that Claire over here has asked for it the most often of all of our kids. Probably the cute dragons.
Even though it is a simpler My First King Domino, there's enough in it that makes it different enough that it's okay that we have both.
So, Elliot, what are we going to rate Dragomino?
4 eggs out of 5.
And that's Dragomino.
In a snap! And we're back!
Before we start talking with Jeremy Howard again, I want to remind all of our listeners that we finally have 1,000 followers on Twitter. Yay! And because of that, we are doing a giveaway. Thanks to 25th Century Games, we actually have a copy of Kingswood to give away. So Go to thefamilygamers.com. It's right there on the front page, or look at our Twitter. We're posting about it.
find that on there. Yeah, head over to the Family Gamers community at thefamilygamers.com/community. There's all sorts of places you can go to find that link.
So enter.
Get on that. Don't sleep on this game. Also, the review for Kingswood is coming out the same day as this show. So hopefully, if you want to know more about the game, head over to thefamilygamers.com and you can read all about it.
Now, back to Jeremy. Hi, Jeremy.
Hey, I'm still here. Thank you so much.
So we've mentioned Man vs. Meeple a couple times. You've talked about it a little bit. What's going on with Man vs. Meeple? What are you doing with that whole crew? They've got a whole team of people.
Yeah, so I'm part of Man vs. Meeple when I was part of Board Game Revolution, which was kind of, I was content creating for them. I also had Jambalaya Plays Games, started off as a website. Then I ended up moving over to YouTube. And when I left Board Game Revolution, I was looking for a place to go. I had, thankfully, blessed be that I had a whole bunch of options of where to go. But I had someone who's named Kira Peevely, who is a giant. She's short, but she's a giant. And as far as the injury theory goes, and she pulled me into Man vs. Meeple because she's been with me since day one. And it's been a team. I work with Man vs. Meeple. I am part of Man vs. Meeple. And I make content. I make all kinds of content. Mainly, I make solo and cooperative content for MVM. That's what most people would know me for. But I also just bring general brand awareness and community awareness on my own, which is where a lot of people see what I do and where I navigate a lot of my space, which is on Facebook. I do a lot of that kind of stuff. Not necessarily acting as Man vs. Meeple all the time, but acting independently, knowing that I am part of Man vs. Meeple. You may see me on things like Solo Sunday, which I have on Facebook, which is now moving over to YouTube. And then now I have just kind of part of chit chat and other content that we're doing. But I'll be adding some of that stuff to this roster so you can actually see me more on that channel. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on in Man vs. Meeple. Right.
Yeah, and you're not afraid to stir the pot, which I actually appreciate.
I have my opinion. I'm an only child, man. I'm 42 years old. I'm still an only child at heart. I need my voice to be heard. I'm still the kid dancing in his onesie PJs talking about, look at me, mom. I can dance.
Hey, so, I dig it.
I'm still that guy.
So we have talked a little bit about the dude already. So
yeah.
So how about the dad and the dude? So there's a whole bunch of these that are kind of coming, which I really love to see. Like Vince Vergangene from Lucky Duck is doing these it's like these collaborative review things with his son, and you're doing it with Dad and the Dude. I love them. I think these things are awesome.
You know, I just, and I have to say this, Mike Petrie, he's got a son. I believe it's Alex. He does a little like unboxing thing. He's doing a little review channel as well. I can't remember the name of it is, but he's doing one. It's so high quality. It's so great. And it is what happened with
his son is adorable.
With my son, he was what, 5 at the time. I just decided, he said, I want to be a YouTube star, Dad. And I said, I'm going to make you a star. And we just got there and just recorded. And that was back when I was first just starting to get on the live content too. So it was like just new to me. I mean, like literally I had my camera phone plugged up, and I just went live from my cell phone. People think it's like so intricate. In the beginning, I started straight from my cell phone. So, you know, we would sit there and we shared a microphone and we just played together. And I feel like it was a good bonding between us. And he's not the biggest board gamer, honestly. He just wants to spend time with his dad.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'll take it whenever I can get it, because I know as they get older, that time will be less and less. Or maybe not, right?
It looks different.
Yeah.
Better language, right? Your relationship is different. Well, just let's hang out, man.
Whatever. Whatever we're going to do.
You got to get a little desperate, too. You're like, I need you, man. I need you. I need you to exist. I say stuff like that to my son. I'm like, I need you to exist. He's like, Dad. Like, yeah. But he gets my sense. He gets my sense of humor. He just happened to come for me. Anyway.
All right. This is going to sound really weird, but one of the things I miss in Corona times is the opportunity to drive my kids to activities and like have discussions with them on the way, especially our oldest, who is right on the cusp of teenagehood, which is a really challenging time to open up and talk about anything.
You know, I had to discipline my son more than I ever thought I would have to, because he's such a good kid. It's so hard. He's such a good kid. Like all the time. He just had a string of like, not even anger, not even like just really failing at everything that's rules related.
Making bad decisions and stuff.
Just bad decision upon bad. I'm like, what is going on? And I'm just like, I had to tell him. I said, you know, man, now I know what my mom had to deal with. No, but I didn't say that in a way of like, now I know what my mom.
Yeah, I know. It just kind of out.
But I said, you know, now I know what, I said it to him. I was like, as a parent, now I know what my mom had to deal with when, you know, you only think about yourself as a kid. You know, you're not thinking bigger than you.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, you don't mean to be disrespectful, but it's hard for you. You're thinking about you, you know? And he just looked at me, and I'm just like, I'm just going to leave because I don't want you to feel like I'm angry. And he just looked at me, and I walked out. And it was hard. It was a tough time.
Discipline is hard, man.
Discipline is hard, you know, because the way I grew up, but back to board. But I know, I just thought about that last night. I thought about it the other night. But yeah, it actually goes back to board games, because it was just like I was excited and I wanted him to do it more. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make sure it was fun for him, but I actually made him do more than I wanted to, maybe. And it died. And it became way more sporadic. And you won't see us do it that much. But like we did it. Again, was it 2 months ago when Creature Comforts came out by Case Table Board Games? Mm-hmm. And what I found is he just likes their games. So so when any one of those games comes, he's just like, can we play that? You know?
All right.
Well, that's a good thing.
Right. But it's interesting is like maybe it's just that publisher, like the themes that they choose for some reason, like just gravitates towards him. He don't like fantasy. He doesn't like, you know, like wizards and dragons, Harry Potter, none of that. He, like superheroes, does not care. I bought Marvel United, does not care at all.
Wow.
He doesn't want like gummy bears that are Captain America's, nothing. Nothing. So yeah, it was interesting to see where he went with that. But like what I do is I respect him for that as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I will go on that journey with him, whether he wants to do it or not. But Dad and Dude will always be alive. And I look at those videos and joy still to this day. And I'll take it when I can get it. And when he's still on his little YouTube thing and his little Twitch thing now. He wants to have a Twitch, right? He still cares about it. So it's like, I'm going to take that bonding whenever I can get it.
Mm-hmm. And I remember when we recorded the last one, Creature Comforts, he said, Dad, did you upload it to YouTube? Because I told my friends it was going to be on there. And I didn't. And I felt bad, you know? He didn't even trick them, you know? Sometimes you try to trick kids, you know? I didn't trick them. And he was just like, Dad, I was telling people to go to my YouTube. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Oh,
did you then turn around and upload it?
Right. I was like, oh, my gosh. Now I got to put it in. But, yeah, like, that's the thing. I think, especially for your audience, I don't know if you have people who want to make create content with their kids, but it's just like, don't force it. Dan Hughes is great. You were like Dan and Cora, Dice Tower.
Yeah, they're going to be on in a couple weeks.
And he said something and that just hit me so hard. I told him about this. He said, you know, I forced this stuff, tried to force it on my older daughter. I'll never forget this board game breakfast. It was really heartfelt. And I tried to force my daughter to do what I'm doing with my 5-year-old. Cora was 5 at the time. And he's like, and it just backfired so bad. And he's like, and then I thought about it myself. Was I being a bad dad? Was I forcing this and da, 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 da? And I was just like, thank you for sharing that. Like, it actually hit me pretty hard because I was thinking to myself, like, there are parents who struggle with that. They want them to love games as much as they do. And some kids are like, just walk away in the middle of a game. And you got to deal with that. You can't force them to. It's not even that they're losing, because kids will have problems with that. Mm-hmm. But some kids will literally walk away. It's just another activity. It's just like playing with the toy. They're less like, don't deal me in here for this fifth round.
yeah, they don't really comprehend that there's
fifth round is a narrative arc
to the game. Right. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Wait, hold on. Let me tally your score. Nope.
But you won. Don't care.
Right.
What?
Nope. Yeah, I know. Like, I won. I don't care.
That's a really important thing to talk about, though. And you know, because obviously we're in a lot of the same social media channels, and we'll see on the Dice Tower, it's like, oh, you know, how do I get my 5-year-old into gaming? You don't.
You don't.
You give them a couple things. You present it. And if they want to – listen, you have to think about gaming like a gift. If you offer a gift to somebody and they do not take that gift, that's it. That's the end of it.
You can try again later.
You can maybe package the gift in a better, you know, better wrapping to see if they'd be interested in a slightly different way. But they got to take that gift. There is a transaction to getting your kid into board games.
You got
to
understand that, like, also, you're doing something that you may not particularly like. Picture yourself having a conversation with someone and say, hey, I want to introduce you to something. Okay. So you're like, all right, you know, I'm game. I don't know what it is yet, but that's fine. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to show you this activity. You're probably not going to be that good at it yet. We're going to teach you how to rock climb, but I'm also going to film you while we're doing it. We're filming a commercial for the rock climbing thing. I figure we'd show like, hey, it's cool for beginners. And you're like, I don't want to.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't want to be on this commercial. Like, I may fall, you know, like. You didn't ask me if I wanted to be on camera beforehand. And that's the thing about putting kids on film. You have to understand that. Even if, you know, my son has decided to be on camera, he struggles, you know? Like, mm-hmm. he struggles. He wants to be more silly than play the game. And, you know, if we allow comments and stuff like that, sometimes people will make fun of your kid, you know, these types of things. And they may find that stuff. So before you get kids into that visual part, think about that. But as far as gaming goes, start slow, start small, start taking rules out of games to make sure they can find it. Play dexterity games versus games, you know, play card games that they can hold in their hand. Play tile games. You know, I always tell people, like, play games that are like very handsy, like, you know, like tile games are really good for that.
We've been talking a lot about a game from Game Right, Shifting Stones, that came out probably a month and a half ago. It's 9 tiles and a bunch of cards. And most people haven't heard about this game just because, at least in our circles, because 2020 and also because it's not a hob. It's not like a hobby board game. But every single person we told about this game has come back and been like, this game was great. It was a smash hit. Mm-hmm. Every single one.
You know, and like, you got to stick on theme. Like, oh gosh, I have some really awesome games. You know who Loki? Loki Games?
Yep.
That's part of
that's
Yellow?
That's Yellow.
Okay, so they brought these games over. One of them is SOS Dino.
Love that game. Kids. Yes.
Oh my gosh. But the thing is, the choices, right? The choices. Yeah. Choices that have a discussion per choice, right? That's a good thing. Like, we're working together. First of all, it's cooperative. And then also, like, the choices you have to make with that one tile.
Yeah.
And, like, you can kind of guide them through the experience. You know how you're going to win, right? But you also need to know how to talk to them, how to win. And that's a really good way. And then you can ask them, can you make a choice? You know, like, there's opportunities for that. Kraken Attack is another one that they have.
Have you played Kraken Attack?
That one I don't know about, no.
Oh, my gosh. So it's the same thing of, you know, you got these little pirates on the thing, and then they're kind of on the outside. There's a boat, and these little Kraken guys are coming through the middle. And they're trying to damage your boat so you don't have anything to attack. And then there's like a Kraken that's coming down this little walkway. It's so silly. But the thing is that with those games, you get a chance to talk about the choices along the way. So it's great opportunity for the parents to drive a conversation and even let them make mistakes that are easily recovered from. And that's what you want as you introduce gamers.
Yes.
You know, we call emergent learners or emergent gamers, depending on where your educational background is. It's like you can't play the crew starting out. The kid doesn't understand the cards. They don't understand, you know, like sets. There's a lot of development there, right? Or even like we just talked about Masterword. Like you can find out a lot about their vocabulary. You can find out a lot about their writing because they have to write on a board. When they're having discussions amongst you because you're not getting the right clues, their frustration level. That's the thing. Do they use their words? Can they communicate? How long can they retain this stuff? You know, those are the types of things that I pay attention to so much when I play with children. Middle-aged kids, I call middle-aged kids. Middle-aged kids are just before teenagers.
Yeah.
And then the teenagers, you know, what interests them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have your young adults and adults, seasoned gamers, not gamers, right? So, like, I just pay attention to those based on their, you know, the things like what reaches them or what can I teach them to understand, like to enjoy. So, yeah, I can go all over the place with kids because I just love teaching.
Something I've been really impressed with over the last year or two is that, I mean, we've been doing this podcast for 5 years. So
yeah,
when we started,
wow. Shout out to that.
Our little gamer kids.
I think we'll hit 6 years in like the summer.
Yeah.
Okay. And how old are your kids now?
So now our kids are 12, 10, and 6.
Okay. Wow.
When we started, they were 7, 5, and please don't eat the pieces.
Right. Animal upon animal. How did that go?
Yeah, that's good.
How many drools did that? How did the drool work on that one?
Thankful for the large, chunky hobble wooden pieces.
But I've found over the last couple of years, especially with our oldest, who she enjoys games, but she's not really a gamer kind of a person, mm-hmm. which is fine. Totally fine. Our 10-year-old is like gung-ho. The more complicated the game, the better. Great.
Oh, yeah. That's good. Okay.
That he's not always good at them, but he just wants to do it.
He's way more about mechanics than strategy. That's fine.
Right.
But
he likes to know that he's trying something hard. There's kids like that, too. Like the kids who like, I like the challenge. My son is gifted as he is. I mean, like multipliers. And squares and square roots. Like, he gets all that stuff.
It's weird.
But he doesn't like doing the math of card games. You know?
Sure. Really? Okay.
He just doesn't.
It depends on the kind of math you're doing.
Yeah.
But then, our 12-year-old, like, I find sometimes when she's not super engaged in a game, I start trying to guide her through her turns the way I would when she was 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
And I get the little talk back of, like, Mom, I know what to do. You need to just let me do it. Mm-hmm. So I think as parents, especially if you've been doing it for a while, you got to also learn when to back off. Right. And even to the extent of like, that's a really bad decision, but I'm going to let you make it because you'll learn better from doing that than from me continuing to walk you through all the steps.
You have to teach your children how to win, and they have to win. They have to learn how to win through losing. I learned that a lot from sports, but there's another way for kids who are not interested in sports. They have to fail. They have to lose. And in board games, they have to do that. They have to know their choices. And there's always a moment, even for adults, where you're like, oh, man, I shouldn't have done that.
Oh, man.
I should have put that card there because of, you know. So it's like, but you got to let kids have that too.
Mm-hmm.
And know that they won't be happy with it.
Yeah.
Some kids can take it on the chin like a champ. There's a certain part of children that, like, some kids just like, I don't care. Like, I'm doing this. I know it's risky. I don't care. You know?
Uh-huh.
Yep.
But there's also adults who are like that, too. Let them be that way. Yeah. You know?
Well,
their goal may not be to win. Their goal may not be to win. They just want to play games with you.
Right.
You know? And they want to have fun.
Or even the, like, huh, I wonder what's going to happen if I try this.
That's the thing.
That's learning.
That's learning. You know what's interesting about gamers that I think they forget? You don't know the power of chucking dice. I think people don't get it. I think as people get older, and I'm just being so I'm assuming. I think a lot of people get away from dice. Do you know how fun it is to chuck dice?
Yes.
I think that's why Strike blew up a couple months ago.
Like, I'm Maybe. Serious. Do you know how fun it is to chuck dice? What is that? Trash pandas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck dice. What are you talking about? Mom, Dad. If you do this, you could lose. The okay. kid has already grabbed the dice already.
Let's go.
Like, they're already grabbing the dice yes. already. You're like, do you understand the impact of your choices? Don't care. Bam. Let them have it.
It's funny what you're saying because there's two things that I think about failure. One of them is that failure will tell you whether or not the thing that you just failed at is something that you care enough about to get yes. better at. That's number one. Yes. And number yes. two is, I think that in some ways, and this goes back to what you were saying about walking Claire through her turns, you know, we talk about board games. We're like, oh, board games are a place where, you know, you can fail in a safe space. And so the failure is not as painful. Yeah, and this is something we've said on the show.
Oh, yeah, we have. And these are true things.
But here's the truth about it. Many times, the parents are more afraid of the failure than the kids yes. are.
Yes.
And so, yes. and I, you know, I'm guilty of this. You know exactly yes, what I'm going to say. So I'll be like, you know what? That might not be the decision you want to make.
Yeah.
I'm saying, oh, I'm teaching my, in my head, I'm like, oh, I'm teaching my kids how to be strategic. When in reality, I'm afraid of them failing.
Yeah.
And sometimes we need to take the training wheels off and also shut up.
Yeah. You know, speaking of which, we recently Creature Comforts, and I watched my son in the last round have such a powerful turn that I was actually afraid of losing the game. I was like, oh, wow. Like, I'm watching him, and he's doing this thing. He doesn't know how to hide the tail yet.
Yeah.
So he's got all this stuff. He's like, Dad, I got this. I got that. And I felt like, oh, you know, he's not going to win too much. You know, I have to correct him on a couple rules. He lays out this turn, and I'm like, he just scored 25 points in this round. He's like laying this, laying that, boom, 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 you know. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to really think my turn out here, right? And I win. I win by 2 or 3 points, something like that. And I wasn't really trying to figure it. I was like, I won, right? And I go, dude, you just had one of the craziest turns in this game. That was really cool. And he was like, yes, that was cool. And I was just thinking, like, he's learned that. So hopefully he can gravitate towards that. Like, he lost. He took the L. I always say, just take the L's because you learn how to turn them into W's. Take the L. And then you'll learn what you did wrong and how you can do it better, you know? Which is going to be hard for a pill for kids to swallow forever until they realize adulthood. They just don't care. Care. Take the L. Bye.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like I just feel like that was a really interesting development that I seen in him. Mm-hmm. You know, like I seen he knew the high and he understood like, hey, I lost. Man, that was fun.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like that right there, that's big. Cooperative games, of course, will do that mm-hmm. because it's like, hey, you may have a big roll or you did a big move and you're like, whoa, we have a chance. You know, oh my gosh.
Yes.
You know, we flipped the card and it was like, whoa. But you may lose, right? Right. You still lose, but it's like you had big moments together. There yeah. was really no, like our family lost, but it was epic, you know,
right.
And you guys can sell it, you know,
yeah,
you can
yeah.
sell it, yep. you know. Atlantis Rising is great for that, by the way. It's great. It's going to get tight. It's going to be insane. But yeah, it's fun. And when you do it individually, like having powerful turns, playing engine builders, dice chuckers, things like that, when they kind of get it, that's important. Picking the right games for your child is really important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, picking games that are just, you may be missing the room. You may think your kid is smart, as I always say. Like, you know how people will say, like, oh, my kid's gifted and talented. My kid is smart. I'm like, no, you might be pressing it too much. Okay? Like, yeah. Maybe pressing it too much. They are bright, but you got to take your time. All right? Yeah. Take your time. I realize you may have to take a rule out. Maybe you have to get to the basics. Isla Katz is – I'm just dropping names, by the way. I'm just doing this because, you know, I want people to know the type of games Absolutely. That work. Like, Isla Katz is perfect. It's a perfect game. If you like tiles, right? Drafting tiles. It has a family mode where you're just putting the tiles together and scoring points. I mean, like, it is straight up colors, putting on tiles.
Sure.
Like, it literally is, it's so easy. And they score points. Then you have your regular mode where you're drafting. You have some penalties for not putting tiles where you need to put them, stuff like that. And then you have the more advanced game. Like, you have different ways of playing that game, you know, and like drafting cards and all that stuff like that. There's a setting for that. And then you have a solo mode. It's great too. It's the ultimate and all in one box. And I think that, like, you know, if you find experiences like that, go to those experiences. Don't just gravitate towards educational games. Don't just gravitate towards these specific games you think are marketed towards your kid. Mm-hmm. They may not be interested at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a difficult thing. You know, like, my son likes dinosaurs. He doesn't like Giraffosaurus, even though it's a fun game. Like, he doesn't like it. He likes dinosaurs. You know, he doesn't like them anymore as much to play a board game with dinosaurs. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
You know, I had to backdoor him into playing SOS Dino. I don't know how I got it. He had fun when he played it, but I had to, like, I was choosing this theme for him, and he didn't want to play it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Sure.
So that's tough. You know, that's a hard thing for parents. I know that, but it's delicate, too. It's very delicate. I understand that. But, yeah, it's what we're saying is it's hard to be a parent.
It is hard.
What I'm rambling on about is the statement of one sentence that says it's hard to be a parent of a virgin gamer.
All right, well, let's
all right, that's it. Good night.
That's it. Good night.
I'm gonna ask you one question. This will be the last question of the night. It's getting late. What are you excited for board game wise in 2021?
Topical wise, or just an actual game.
What are you excited in 2021?
Board game related.
Well, you know, we are really all excited to get back to convention season. You know, there's a lot of hugs to be had. There's a lot of, you know, hey, I miss yous and exchanges and eye contact that we need to have with each other. I'm thankful that we get to look in each other's eyes right now. But, you know, there's just nothing like a good old hug and a handshake and all that stuff like that. And, you know, sitting down, having dinner like we do, you know, having a drink together like we do as adults, responsible adults. And just, I just miss it. Yeah. I really miss it. Now, I filmed a top 10 with some of my friends on MVM. And, like, I actually got, like, emotional about halfway through, and I had to, like, get myself together. And I was just like, because we said some jokes to each other, and I was just like, I miss you.
Yeah.
I miss you guys. Yeah. Like, it was hard, you know? Yeah. And that's a thing. That's content creators. But it's just like, as a whole, like, it's just so much fun playing with strangers and talking to them. And, you know, that's so fun. And I do like actually it sounds like creeper stuff. But I love talking to the kids. Like, I like engaging with kids and showing families games. Like, I'm kind of a walking salesman. So, like, I see people walking around and, like, they don't understand, but it's like, I know these games. I know what will connect with them. And I love that kind of stuff. I do feel like we're in a golden time for family games. Mm-hmm. Family games that are smart. They're smart. Mm-hmm. They keep parents interested and not just enough. They're interesting. Draftosaurus would be a good example.
Oh, yeah.
It's a drafting game.
That's a favorite in our family.
Yep.
Right. It's a drafting game. It is actually a drafting game. We talked about Prisma Arena. Like, there's strategy there.
Yeah.
You know, if you like us, if you're a skirmish gamer, you'll like this. You know, if you're an action selection person, you'll like this. You know, like, there's things to it. You still like stickers. Some of us adults still like stickers.
Absolutely.
So it's like, you know, it's just like, that's a thing. So it's like, there's a great opportunity. All these games you talked about, Kingswood, Fallout, like, those are family games, you know? Like, and you are the person that buys these games and you introduce them to your family. And I think as long as you're mindful of that and you start to open your mind to different types of games, maybe in the ones you are not necessarily attracted to, but you see something that's like, maybe I don't like the worker placement component, but my son or my daughters, you know, they may like this engine building component. Seems like right up their alley. It's not just about you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's getting a family to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And you have enough feedback through play to know that. So, like, you know, think about your children when you make your purchase too, not just you. And hopefully that's something that you can use going into 21.
All right. Could not possibly agree with you more. Yeah, I think even our kids we take our two big kids with us to PAX. And I think they look at it with some trepidation because by the end, I mean,
we are all exhausted. By
we're all around, and we drive to and from PAX, so we're just like,
ugh. Oh lord, yeah.
And we drive back Sunday night, and we're like, all right, kids, Monday morning, time to go to school.
Yeah. So, but I could tell that they missed it. I could tell that they were like, man.
And they were like, they missed it. Wouldn't this be about PAX time? Yeah. We're like, yeah.
Is it a something? Yeah, is it a something missing? Yeah,
they're missing. They're missing it big time. So
you got BGG Con, Dice Tower, that Dice Tower one, and all three just gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Essen. So you got the four. Essen, BGG, Dice Tower, PAX,
Gen
all
Con.
Gone. Oh, I'm just talking about just the fall, like fall, winter. Okay. Just that alone, there's a lot there.
Yeah.
There's a lot. There's all that's in it. You got the biggest one in the world.
Yeah.
The biggest one in the world, followed by these monster ones that are week to week to week,
Pretty much back to back.
Yeah. And tons of local conventions, too. Yeah. Because there's a local convention we go to every September with the whole crew. And there was a lot of talk this year about, like, man, I want to go and see the games and talk to the people. And
It's
just not there right now.
Hopefully by September we'll be able to get back to that. But yeah. I don't know. They already said it was going to be virtual. So I don't know what they're going to do.
We're flipping a coin and hopefully it hits heads because I said heads. And heads is going to be conventions.
All right. We're going for it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Jeremy, this has been awesome. This has been so much fun. I'm so glad we could finally get you on the show. We could talk about all sorts of board games and board game adjacent stuff. And thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. And I'm not going to invite myself back on, but I love talking about family games.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, do we. That's why we're here.
I was like, wow, this is an opportunity for me just to talk about family games. Mm-hmm. We talk about so many Euros and we talk about all these medium heavyweight games. And we look down upon, even through language, I can tell, we look down upon, it's light. It's this. There's so many fun games.
Yeah.
There's so many fun games.
Yeah.
And I play them with adults at lunchtime every day. I play them at airports with random strangers. Yes, I do play in airport bars with random people.
You're just waiting for someone to they slow down their step just a little bit and look over. No. You're like, hey, come play a game.
I do not lack confidence. I do not lack salesmanship. I do not lack all that stuff. I don't lack that. But I get to have those experiences. So there's just so much opportunity there. And I love talking about them, those types of games in that market. So, yeah. If you have me back, I would love to come back. But
absolutely,
don't put that pressure on you. Just thanks for having me.
Let's not doubt that. That is a likely occurrence in the future.
Thanks for having me.
So where can people find you online? Where can people go?
So if you do just follow me on just Jeremy Howard on Facebook, you can find me there. Jamba PG, which is former part of my Jambalaya Plays Games. It's just Jamba PG. Okay, so Jambalaya Like the Dish, Jamba PG. And then you can also find me on Man vs. Meeple. I'll have Solo Sundays on Sunday at 3 p.m. Central. And you can also see me on Chit Chat randomly. And look forward to The Stack, which is going to be where I stack up games and I rate them by that stack. So,
oh, I like
that.
I dig it. I dig that.
It's a rich, interesting thing, yeah.
Sweet. Awesome. Well, where can people find us?
Well, people can always find us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram at our handle FamilyGamersAA. You can also join our Facebook community. The easiest way we think to get there is go to thefamilygamers.com/community, but you can also search for The Family Gamers Community on Facebook. That's fine.
Yep. You can also email us, andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Please don't forget to subscribe to the show, tell your friends about the show, and leave us a review at Apple Podcast or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find us on Amazon Music and TuneIn and Stitcher and Spotify and all of those things.
The Family Gamers is sponsored by First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points.
All right. Thank you to First Move Financial for sponsoring this episode of the show.
All right. Well, thanks once again, Jeremy, for joining us on the show. I think we could keep talking for ages, but we probably should stop here.
Oh, well, I can tell we're all super passionate about this, right? And so we could talk about this forever.
Definitely.
All right. But we're going to cut it here and resume some other time.
All right.
Until next week.
Play games with your kids.